We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, October 26, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, multidisciplinary artist and musician Yek Yassin, Nick Galanin, will preview his Friday Evening at Egan lecture. Local playwright Joel Bennett will discuss Dreaming Glacier Bay, a new production at Perseverance Theater. Diane and Taya will tell us about the Zombie Run, and Nancy DeCherney will highlight this weekend's entertainment with Arts Up. Those interviews, national native news, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Looking at weather today, there's a flood watch in effect from 4 p.m. this afternoon through Friday evening. Heavy rain at times today, tonight, and parts of tomorrow. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In 1940, construction of the Grand Coulee Dam ended a generations-long tradition among the region's tribes, who had gathered at a nearby waterfall every year. But last year, five tribes revived that tradition, and as correspondent Emily Schwing reports, a film documenting their story premieres Thursday.
The film is called United by Water. Director Derek Lemire says it retraces the steps of ancestors of tribal members who relied on the Upper Columbia River.
And getting back on the water traditionally through canoes, you know, trying to, I guess, recreate our history that's been missing for over 75 years.
Lemire is Chippewa Cree and a descendant of the Colville tribe. He also shot and produced the film. Traditionally, tribes that relied on the Upper Columbia for fish gathered each year at Kettle Falls in northeastern Washington. That ended with the construction of the Grand Coulee Dam in the 1940s. Then last spring, UCUT, the Upper Columbia United Tribes, got together, hand-built canoes, and traveled the river once again.
I am told by many of you that I must forgive, and so I shall.
The film is narrated by author, poet, and Spokane tribal member Sherman Alexi.
I am told by many of you that I must forgive. And so I shall, after the floodwaters burst each successive dam downriver from the Grand Coulee.
This is Alexi reading his poem, Pow Wow at the End of the World. Many Indians are familiar with it, and Lemire says he wanted it to be part of the film. There's also archival footage from what's now known as the Ceremony of Tears. It was the last gathering of the region's tribes before the area was flooded for the Grand Coulee Dam. United by Water premieres in Spokane. I'm Emily Schwing reporting.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has awarded a contract to assess abandoned uranium mines on and near the Navajo Nation. As Ryan Heinches reports, it begins the process of cleaning up 30 sites on the 27,000-square-mile reservation.
The $85 million contract was awarded to the California-based engineering company Tetra Tech. The deal is part of a 2015 legal settlement and will fund the initial phase of what's expected to be a years-long cleanup of some of the more than 500 abandoned uranium mines on the Navajo Nation. Tetra Tech will partner with Navajo Technical University and local businesses to train tribal members in uranium waste cleanup and assessment. The company will also start an internship program at the university to give students technical work experience. Navajo officials applauded the contract, but say much more remains to be done. Abandoned uranium mines have been associated with elevated levels of radiation in drinking water and widespread health problems on the reservation for decades. Nearly 30 million tons of uranium was mined on and near the Navajo Nation for nuclear weapon use during the Cold War. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
High school football playoffs are happening in several states this week, and in South Dakota, two teams from the Pine Ridge Reservation are looking to become the first tribal schools to win the state championship. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Pine Ridge High School is mainly known for basketball. The Thorpes have won state titles on both the boys' and girls' sides through the years. But this year's football team on Pine Ridge has won 7 of 9 games, and they qualify for South Dakota's 11A playoffs. The Thorpes will travel to the southeast corner of the state to face Dakota Valley. The Panthers won all 9 of their regular season games this year. The Pine Ridge team will travel about 360 miles for its first-round game. Red Cloud High School, a private institution in Pine Ridge, plays a second-round game in Class 11B. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at AARP.org. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guest today is Yatsin Nick Galanin, UAS artist in residence and multidisciplinary artist and musician. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I hope I didn't mispronounce your name too badly. Would you say it again for everybody listening?
Oh, you got it. Yatsin.
Cool. Well, speaking only for myself, I know you primarily as a musician from the band Silver Jackson, which I've seen in concert a couple of times, and now Indian Agent, the new band. And I do want to ask you about your music, but you're also a powerful visual artist. So first, I wanted to talk about some of your pieces that have really struck a chord with me. First off, the piece called I Think It Goes Like This. It's a part of Native Art Now in the Adelyog Museum in Indianapolis, Indiana. I was wondering if you would please tell us the story of this appropriated and deconstructed totem pole.
I've been working with, I was customarily trained in wood carving to start. And over the years of working through cultural centers, teaching, even commercial spaces, can't ignore the commercial economy of cultural art, especially something like totemic art. It's really abundant up and down the coast. So I was looking at the representation of how this has transformed our visual language, I suppose. There's a deconstruction that's happened in our culture's art form just through the genocide of indigenous culture, where our master apprentice education systems were not continued due to displacement, all of these effects, I suppose, and then the homogenization of our culture back through anthropology and the institution. This chopped up totem kind of touches on a lot of these ideas and the reconstruction of culture, I suppose, based on institutions. So another note on this pole here is that it's created out of Indonesian carved totems that are sold for tourist trade. So it's a decimation of indigenous knowledge and technology by colonization.
Yeah, that's interesting. So where did you find this Indonesian sort of commercialized totem pole?
They're actually all over. I mean, you can find them and purchase them. I'm sure Juno has a ton of shops with this work. But they've got them up and down the coast.
That's really interesting. It's kind of a dark piece to look at it, but I think that it really evokes all of those things that you just said. It's interesting that all those concepts can be summed up in one image. I really like that one. And then the second piece I liked even more, Ism Number 1, which I think is a painting. I haven't seen it in person, though I'd really like to. Could you describe the image in the painting for our listeners?
Yeah, this is actually the work itself is a photograph. I was working with the collision of religion and culture, I suppose. There's historically, this is what was put in place in our communities to remove cultural knowledge, essentially. So this imagery is a juxtaposition of religious iconography and indigenous iconography.
So what's the number one ism for you?
What's the number one ism?
Yeah.
I don't know. What's your number one ism?
Feminism.
All right.
Well, is that on exhibit anywhere? I'd love to see it in person someday.
It will be. It's I've got a solo exhibition. I can't announce the venue yet, but it's opening in May of next year. So that'll definitely be on exhibit there as well.
Coming soon. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, we hear a lot about your Tlingit side and the Tlingit influences here in Juneau since you were born and raised in Sitka. What about the Unanga side? How does that come out in your work?
It's definitely something that's, you know, I haven't been out to visit any of my Unangan family or even the land out there. I was raised here. So there's definitely a gap in my understanding of that side of the community. And I think that's really reflective on just the history of how especially in the Aleutians, the Unangan culture's displacement that's happened there historically. So it's still embedded in my work, and I'm aware of these histories. I'm aware of the stories of the Russian violence on the coast up there. It's just a continual form of seeking and learning more about my family and my lineage.
We're speaking with Yatsin Nick Galanin, University of Alaska Southeast Artist in Residence. Tomorrow, your talk, your evening at Egan talk tomorrow, is titled Unceremonially Killing, Saving, and Dreaming. What do you mean by unceremonially?
That was based on a recent video piece that I created that was exhibited in New York recently. It was projected on the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a unceremonial dance mask, 21st century, is what the video work was called, and it was this process of deconstructing, basically carving an Indonesian mask till there was just chips left, and then reconstructing those chips into a form of a mask, and then dancing the mask. So it's this idea of protecting our culture. A lot of our ceremonies were not allowed in the past. So it's an idea of, there's a form of disguise in this sense, where a lot of Western cultures come for our ceremonial objects. A lot of this culture has taken them and put them into institutions and museum space. So to create something that is deemed unceremonial, so dance is a form of protection, I think. And it's also a reminder that we are the embodiment of, the culture is not only contained in these objects, it's also contained by our community.
Is that what you're going to be talking about tomorrow in your lecture?
I'll be talking about a lot of this stuff, yeah. I can't give it all to you right now, though.
No, I wouldn't want you to.
Better show up.
Oh, yeah. Now, you have plenty of experience in higher education. You've held adjunct professor position at UAS before, but now you're helping UAS develop a two-year program for Northwest Coast art. Could you tell us a bit about that?
I know that it needs to happen, and I'm excited that possibility of having this as a resource for Indigenous arts and students in general. So there's not a lot of options for programs like this across the world, to be honest. So I know I think it's important work.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Makes me wish I could go to school all over again. I'd love to sign up for that program. What else will you be working on while you're hanging out in Juneau?
I've got some classes I'll be teaching. I've got a 40-foot totem pole I'm the lead carver on for Gold Belt, so we'll be over at that school downtown carving that most of the winter, I think. So I'll be in and out of Juneau quite a bit.
That totem pole is, it sounds really interesting. I've only read a little bit about it. I don't really know too much. I know it's a healing pole. Can you give us any more hints?
It's going over to Douglas, over where the harbor was burnt down. So I've been working with the elders and community to get the design ready for that. And I think we've gotten it approved, so we're going to start carving.
Oh, that's great. I can't wait to see it. I hope I get to see it in progress, but
You just have to stop in.
Yeah, no problem. Do you know when it'll be completed?
I'm not sure. You know, I think we're going to try to, we'll see how things get moving. So,
Can we talk a little bit about the new band, Indian Agent, and the new album, Meditations in the Key of Red?
Yeah. So that was a project that, you know, I think we started recording that, the first songs for this album 3 years ago, immediately after Silver Jackson, Starry Skies, Open Eyes album release. So it was just ongoing collaboration of songs, and we ended up with 16 songs and over an hour of music. Feel pretty good about what we put together. We collaborated with some amazing artists, Tanya Tagak, Budo, Michelle and Deggio Cello, Eric Blood mixed the record. So I think you should just check it out. If you guys haven't heard it, you can find it online.
Yeah, I've been listening.
We're releasing a double vinyl LP with it, and Sub Pop Records will be distributing the physical for us, so pretty happy about that.
Congratulations. That's big news.
Yeah.
We love Sub Pop here.
Oh, good.
Yeah. One of my favorite labels, anyway. And the other members of the band, OC Notes, a.k.a. Otis Calvin III and Zach Wass. How would you describe your sound?
I don't know. Our sound's undescribable.
There's some great write-ups about the new band and the new album. I saw a really good piece in ADN. And, of course, here at KTOO, our very own Annie B. did a great interview with you guys. And that article is up on our webpage, ktoo.org. The track Mother was one of my favorites off the album. And I was just wondering what it was like to work with Tanya Tagak.
It was great. Tanya's amazing. I'm such a fan of all of her music and just her as a person. So it was really a high honor to have her close the entire album out.
Yeah, and I'm sure she felt very lucky to work with you three.
I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. We'll see.
Will Indian Agent be performing in Juneau anytime soon?
We don't have any shows booked in Juneau. I know we just played a show down in Reno that went that was great, and we'll probably be organizing some, but we're so busy right now. Otis is getting ready to tour. He also performs with Shabazz Palaces. So he's going to be over in Europe with them coming up this month, I think. So we're just trying to find a time where we can all get together, their schedules, stuff like that.
Yeah, I saw him on their the Shabazz Palaces Tiny Desk concert. Would you ever consider doing a Tiny Desk concert for NPR?
Sure.
That'd be pretty cool.
I'd love to do that. Yeah.
All right. We're speaking with Yek Yatsin Nick Galanin. He is the University of Alaska Southeast Artist in Residence. He is also giving the Evening at Egan Talk tomorrow night. It's at 7 p.m. Is that right?
Yes, 7 p.m.
Yeah, 7 p.m. tomorrow night on the UAS campus. Nick, thank you so much for talking with us today. Is there anything else you want to add?
Nope. I just hope I see you guys at the talk and go check out that new record.
You've just got so much out there. It's a lot to get into. Yeah, but it's all great stuff. So anyway, thank you. Thanks again. We're going to, your outro is going to be Life Keeps Spinning.
All right.
All right. See you soon.
See you. Earth don't turn like it used to before. The people don't celebrate the king anymore. It's been 8 months since our last world tour. Ready to escape, spread our wings and explore.
Find out about a life so fascinating, so compelling, that it draws 1920s movie star John Barrymore to the wilderness of Glacier Bay. Who is the couple he keeps returning to visit, and how are their lives intertwined? Dreaming Glacier Bay is a new play based on true events by Juno playwright Joel Bennett. See it at Perseverance Theater, October 24th to November 18th. Tickets at ptalaska.org, The Jack, Hearthside Books, and 463-TIXS.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and we got a full house in the studio right now. Michael Haney, director of Dreaming Glacier Bay, Joel Bennett, the playwright, and Amy O'Neill Hauk, representative of the theater. Amy, what's your title at Perseverance?
Director of Marketing and Community Engagement.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And my job. So we're all here to talk about the new production, Dreaming Glacier Bay, now showing at Perseverance Theater. The story is mainly about four people, the famous actor John Barrymore, a woman named Muz Ibak and her husband, and Dolores Barrymore, John's wife. So how did John Barrymore and Muz Ibak ever get to know each other in the first place?
Ah, that's part of the mystery. I think really the story is in many ways a mystery. That long ago, it's very hard to identify everything that happened in sequence. But it's my belief, and there's good evidence, that they met long before she came to Alaska. And, when she met, and I believe they had, a special relationship, which I think it's up to the audience to try to unravel. And, I think many people will be trying to unravel it for a long time, but I have my own ideas. But I think it's pretty plain if you see the production, what's going on there. But, she traveled to Alaska at a time when, it was essentially just after the gold rush. And Barrymore did not travel at that time. He waited until the late 20s and early 30s to do his trips. And by that time, he was married. He was on his third marriage. So, the mystery of why he came and what he was looking for is part of the big,
Because he went out of his way to visit them three or four times on Lemmershire Island.
I was just going to mention that he could have traveled anywhere in the world, and he sailed his yacht up to Glacier Bay more than once.
Yeah, and spent not just a quick visit, but 10 days, 2 weeks at a time, at Lemmershire Island, where they had their little homestead. So, it's quite remarkable when you consider that he was arguably the wealthiest and most famous actor in Hollywood in 1931, and they were, you might say, Mr. and Mrs. Nobody.
Homesteaders.
Yeah. Did Barrymore participate in any Alaskan activities on his visits, like fishing or hunting or prospecting?
He was a fly fisherman. It's interesting, one of the few pictures I found of him on the streets of Juneau or at the hangar wharf, really, was he was about to go out fly fishing to Admiralty Island on Hasselberg Lake. Shows him with a creel and a rod and a few people standing around. He did go bear hunting, and that's a big part of the story as well, how that figured into the plan for Muz and for John and Dolores to have a son. I think he toured some. He definitely toured a bit on the outer coast and certainly up into Glacier Bay, and he stopped on his way up from Victoria, British Columbia, where they met the boat, and then stopped and toured, along the way, like most people do.
But he was a big outdoorsman.
Yeah.
Mountain climber, hunter, fisherman. Yeah.
Oh. Well, it sounds like he was right where he belonged then.
Yes.
Not so out of place, even though he's big Hollywood. Well, whenever we have guests here talking about a new play, I always like to hear about the look, the set, the props, the costumes, etc. Could you describe what we'll see when we attend?
Well, the play takes place on Lemmershire Island in the little cabin that was owned by the Ibaks. And they built it, and they were literally, they were the only ones on this island. That's all that's there, and it's still there. And so we don't have, it's not a replica of the cabin. We have an impressionistic cabin on stage that Dana, our set designer, designed, and it's beautiful. It gives the sense of the cabin, but it's also inside outside, because their view was of the bay, and there's a fireplace and the homey things. So most of the play takes place inside that, but there's this gorgeous painted backdrop of the sky, and I think that's almost enwraps the entire set. So you get a sense of just the outdoors and the grandeur of Glacier Bay.
Cool. And it's interesting because you can step right out of Perseverance Theater and get a pretty good view, too.
Yeah, not bad.
So this is the
world. Except if it's like today.
Hey, we love our liquid sunshine. So this is the world premiere of Dreaming Glacier Bay, and it's only running in Juneau so far. So we're really lucky to be the part of the select few who get to see it for the first time. How does it feel to be premiering your work here?
It's immensely gratifying, you know, and primarily to share this story with the community and with the larger region as well. You know, I'm making an effort to make sure that people in Hoonah and Gustavus know that it's running now, and hopefully some people will come from those areas. You know, it's really closer to they're closer to the story than we are. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what's gratifying to me. I mean, just to really be able to kind of make a piece, slice of history live and live for people that didn't know about it.
How has it been received so far?
Well, we've had multiple audiences in you know, readings and workshops and in the development process, and now we're having some you know, preview performances. So
it's been very good. Positive reception, I think.
Yeah, we've had two previews this week, and the response has been very positive. And we have one final pay-as-you-can preview tonight. So,
and then we open on Friday.
That's right.
Wow, that's great. And then how long does the play run?
It runs through November 18th.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much time to get to see it.
4 weekends.
Luckily, tonight's a great night to be inside. I bet you'll get a good turnout. I really appreciate the pay-as-you-can nights. So thanks for doing that. Mm-hmm. Any contact from the Barrymore family?
Not so far. I do have a really close friend, though, who knows Drew Barrymore very well. So when the time is right, we'll expose you know, the work to her.
Oh, that's great. I bet she'd be pretty interested in that. Maybe she'll even come up here. Did any of you or the cast get to go up and visit Glacier Bay at some point, or have you ever been?
Well, Joel's been there several times. And when we did the workshop 2 years ago, we took some of the actors who were in the workshop, and I was lucky enough to go along also to, and we stayed in the cabin. No, we didn't stay overnight, but we went and visited the cabin and walked around the island. It was great.
The cabin's still there?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Somebody lives in it, right?
Yeah, it's in the summer season, one of the owners lives there, and then in the winter, there's a caretaker and a watchman.
Wow. Is it sort of like a, you call it like a historical landmark, something like that, preserved in any way?
Well, there are pictures of Barrymore and letters, and there's a whole trunk of letters that he wrote to the Ibox, and lots of pictures on the wall, and, you know, sort of relics of the era, and of when the Ibox lived there. But it's not. It's
privately owned.
Yes, yeah. Privately.
Yeah. Yeah. But very well preserved and cared for.
Is there anything else on the island these
There's
days?
There's no gift shop yet.
No. No other cabins, other structures, other
Actually,
residences.
Actually, in the last 10 years, there, within a couple of miles, there's a little small cabin or two on the shoreline now. But, you know, when the Ibox were there, there was no one else.
Great. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm with Michael Haney and Joel Bennett and Amy O'Neill Houck, from Perseverance Theater, all here talking about Dreaming Glacier Bay. The play is now showing Pay As You Can, one more Pay As You Can tonight, and it opens on Friday and it runs through November 18th. Anything else anybody would like to add about the production?
Well, actually, there's two more Pay As You Can performances after the opening, and that would be Sunday,
okay,
this Sunday the 29th, and then the following Thursday, which would be the 2nd of November.
Great. And where can we go for more information?
You can go to ptalaska.org. And, of course, tickets are available in the usual places.
Including on that website.
Yeah, and by calling our box office at 463-TIXS.
Yes. Either of you two like to add anything else?
It's a beautiful story that Joel has written. And I think it explores in a quiet adult way the difference, the thin line between friendship and love, and how we all crave for inner peace and contentment and what we try to do to get it.
It sounds like a beautiful story. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Thank you, all three of you, for being here today and for sharing those details about the show.
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you.
Good luck with the opening on Friday.
No, okay.
Break a leg.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 26th of October, 2017. It was on this day, 1900, Henry James wrote his first letter to the young novelist Edith Wharton, beginning a long friendship. Wharton was an admirer of James's work. She sent him one of the first short stories she ever wrote. He wrote back to say that he liked the story, but she shouldn't write about Europe if she didn't live there. He said, "Be tethered in native pastures, even if it reduces you to a backyard in New York." So she was inspired to write about New York, and the result was her first big novel, The House of Mirth, in 1905. They remained friends for the rest of Henry James's life, even as Edith Wharton became more and more successful and Henry James's novels sold less and less well. It's the birthday of the Russian novelist and poet Andrei Bely, which was the pen name of Boris Nikolaevich Bagayev. Born Moscow, 1880, best known for his 1913 novel Petersburg, a book of which Nabokov said, "My greatest masterpieces of 20th century prose are Joyce's Ulysses, Kafka's Transformations, Bailey's Petersburg, a story of conspiracy and betrayal during the 1905 Russian Revolution." And it's the birthday of the early self-help writer Napoleon Hill, born in a one-room cabin in Wise County, Virginia, in 1883. He was a reporter, and when he was in his mid-20s, he was assigned to interview Andrew Carnegie, who had grown up poor in Scotland, worked his way up in the American steel industry, became one of the richest men in the world. Carnegie told Hill that, in his opinion, there was a formula for success and anyone could achieve it. And he told the young man he ought to consider writing a book about the idea. So he went around interviewing hundreds of successful people. And in 1937, he published his book, Think and Grow Rich. It was enormously successful, and it still is. It has sold more than 70 million copies. Book in which he wrote, "Do not wait, the time will never be just right. Start where you stand and work whatever tools you may have at your command, and better tools will be found as you go along." Here's a poem for today by Gary Snyder entitled Map. A hill, a farm, a forest, and a valley. Half a hill plowed, half woods, a forest valley, and a valley field. Sun passes over, two solstices a year, cow in the pasture, sometimes deer, a farmhouse built of wood, a forest built on bones, the high field hawks, the low field crows. Wren in the brambles, frogs in the creek, hot in summer, cold in snow. The woods fade and pass, the farm goes on, the farm quits and fails, the woods creep down. Stocks fall, you can't sell corn, big frost and tree mice starve. Who wins? Who cares? The woods have time, the farmer has heirs. Poem Gary Snyder, Map, from his collection Left Out in the Rain, published by Shoemaker and Horde Publishers, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Staples, with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets, signage, and more. In stores or at staples.com, Staples. It's pro time. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing New Voices in Poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The KRNN Spotlight Concert Series presents a night of country music in tribute to longtime DJ Don Drew. Local musicians Andrew and Aaron Heist, Riley Woodford, Annie Bartholomew, Patricia Hull, and more will sing tunes from Don's real country playbook. The show starts at 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st at the Gold Town Theater. Tickets at krnn.org, the station, and at the door. Real country
song. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's just about 20 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are Diane and Taya with two zombies, Sam Marnin and Miley Quigley. They're all here to talk about the zombie run this weekend. Did you run over to KTOO today?
No.
We moved quickly.
Well, that's good. It's pretty wet out there. I did the zombie run once, and I did not, you know, survive. I was attacked. Have you ever made it to the end without getting attacked?
No.
Has anybody?
Oh, yeah. People can make it. But the zombies are fierce. Let's not kid ourselves. You're going to have to be fast, and you're going to have to be moving, because the zombies are hungry.
I guess I wasn't fast enough last year, but I'll try again this time.
Please do try again. It's going to be a great day. Our race is this Saturday, and it's the 28th. And, you know, one thing I really like to think of, the weekend is filled with all kinds of great activities around town. But and most of them are about, you know, indulging a little bit of sugar here and there. So why not start your weekend running from zombies and get something healthy in before you have a few treats and snacks?
That's a really good point. I've been kind of treating myself all month, so I really need it. Diane, what's your connection to the Zombie Run?
Well, the Zombie Run benefits Harborview Elementary School, and I'm a second grade teacher at the school. And so we will use the proceeds from our race to support some of our classroom efforts. And we are hoping to get a reader board outside the parking lot area and let folks, you know what's going on in our school. So we also have a lot of diverse programs. We have optional programs, mainstream classroom, preschool. So to educate and make education, you know, real and connected for kids, it costs a little bit extra. So this is an important fundraiser for us.
And these two here, Sam and Miley, you are going to be zombies in the race. Tell me, what's that going to be like?
Well, I've been a zombie for 4 years now. The race has been going on for six. This will be the sixth year. And being a zombie is super fun. Like, you get a big adrenaline rush as you're running on the beach. Towards the end of the race, the zombies are allowed to run. And, like, that's the one part that I think it's the most fun. And you're just really trying to get those flags. And that's your last chance to really go all out on the people. So
that's the part. I survived all the way up until the beach.
Yeah,
when I did
that's
it the
hardest part.
It is, because it's near the end and you're tired.
Yeah, the runners should know that the zombies are not going to knock them over, but all the runners have flags on them, and the zombies are going to be going after the flags. And
yeah,
as Miley said, in the forest, the zombies are a little slow, but once you hit the beach, zombies are fast.
Yeah, but we'll be a little bit easier on those younger kids. So.
That's good to know. And Sam, what about you? Have you been a zombie before?
Yeah. I've done this for 5 years.
Oh, wow. So you're like a super zombie.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how many victims you've claimed?
No.
Too many to count. Be afraid, yeah. Runners. And Diane, are you a runner too?
I am going to run. I actually started running this last year and have enjoyed quite a few 5Ks, so I hope to be out there as well. And I hope to be a survivor. You know, if you survive the zombie run, do you come out with one or more flags, then you get a special band that says, "I survived the zombie run," nice orange and bright. And, well, if you didn't, you get the other color. Says you were consumed.
Yeah, I think I got a bandana that said I did not survive or something.
Right.
Sam and Miley, what's your favorite part about being a zombie?
I think my favorite part is you get to chase your friends around, and you also get to chase around people you don't know.
How about you, Miley?
Well, my favorite part is just running on the beach trying to chase down those last people, and they're trying to, like, trick you, and it's just fun trying to outrun people and stealing people's flags, so.
Are you going to have costumes and makeup, or do you just wake up that day as a zombie?
Well, all the zombies, of course, have makeup, and Little Red Riding Hood will be out there, zombie Little Red Riding Hood, and the grandma will be out there, and the werewolf.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we hope the runners will come dressed as well, wearing their costumes.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I did read online that costumes are welcome and encouraged, but no clowns. Why no clowns?
Well, that was more of a thing last year. There seemed to be like a nationwide scare of clowns, and even locally kids were pretty uptight about that. But I think that the clown fear has eased a little bit. So if you must be a clown, be a clown and come on down.
Yeah, don't stay away on account of being a clown. Zombie clown would be probably the scariest thing I could think of. One of the scarier things I've ever encountered on a trail. All right, so let's go over the details again. When and where is the run taking place?
The run is this Saturday, October 28th, and you can register now. You don't have to wait to register on the day of the race. You can register at Pavitt's. You can register at the Nugget Alaska Club, or you can come on into Harborview Elementary and pre-register. And we're keeping registration open until 5 o'clock, till noon tomorrow, noon on Friday. And to encourage anyone who wants to register online at active.com, we have a skeleton cookie made by Chef Steph, mother of a zombie in this room, and she is donating that to the first person who registers on active.com starting now.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to go on, we will have a tasty gingerbread skeleton guy for you on Saturday.
Cool. Maybe I can get online on the break.
Yeah, there you go. So registration now is $10 for adults and 10 for kids and 15 for adults. And it's bumped up to 15 for kids and 25 for adults on the day of the race.
Okay.
We're racing at Sandy Beach, so come on down to the shelters. Registration on day of race starts at noon, and the race itself starts at 12:30. We're going to do the 1 mile race first, and we should say that on the 1 mile that the zombies are friendly. They hand out candy.
Aww.
So if you're not up for being chased in the woods or on the beach by a scary zombie, you can still come and enjoy the 1 mile run and get some candy from a zombie.
These zombies are pretty interesting characters. I've never known zombies like that before. So you guys, you will be zombies. I'm talking to Sam and Miley now. But do you know what you're going to dress up for as Halloween?
Well, I'm going as a grandma this year.
Okay. How about you, Sam?
I'm going as a stormtrooper.
Stormtrooper, very cool. Do you guys have any, do you want to confess to any costumes that really scare you, like clowns?
I'm not scared of that. I don't know. I've never really seen very scary costumes. Maybe, like, if someone was really good at, like, makeup, maybe, like, a bone sticking out or something that looked really realistic.
Some of those people who jump out in the flats and surprise you are pretty scary. Like the bush monster.
Oh, I've never really been out in the flats to trick or treat.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty serious.
I'll take her word for it. How about you, Sam? Is there any costume that freaks you out?
Oh, that's kind of the same as Miley.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty gory. All right. And any sponsoring organizations we should give a shout out to?
Absolutely. I wanted to make sure to mention that there are prizes that are going to be distributed after the race. Beforehand, we're going to have some music going, do a little zombie dance. And after the race is over, prizes, for the door prizes will be given out. There will be some snacks and coffee as well. And we definitely have some partners to thank, and the prizes are still coming in. We've got things from Papa Murphy's, Discovery Southeast, McDonald's, Chef Steph. We've got Foggy Mountain, and the Search Dental Crew is donating goodie bags with toothbrushes and toothpaste to everybody who signs up.
It wouldn't be Halloween without toothbrushes and toothpaste.
That's right. And as well, we have a donation from Douglas Cafe. So there are a lot of good prizes. It's a lot of fun. It's a healthy way to stay to start a, you know, a treat-filled weekend. So it's a great cause as well, so we hope that we'll get a lot of runners. We usually have around 300, and we hope to beat that number this year.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for being here today. Anything else you'd like to add, Zombies?
Come and enjoy a fun activity before Halloween.
Sounds good. How about you?
Yeah.
Brains. I think they're going to get you.
Yeah, I think
beware.
They're going to be. I really
be
feel
afraid.
Like they're going to be targeting me.
I think they're looking at you right now.
I know. They're clocking me. Stalking me. All right. Well, thanks again for being here today. And, oops. See you on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All down the street, standing in line with white lipstick and one thing on their mind. Pale purse underneath the paint, you're just a little girl dancing at the zombie zoo. Dancing at the zombie zoo, painted in a corner, and all you wanna do is dance down at the zombie zoo. Cute little dropout, how come you back a ride? Is your mother in a clinic? Is your father got no job? Sometimes you're so impulsive, you shaved off all your hair. You look like Boris Karloff, and you don't even care. You're dancing at the zombie zoo. Dancing at the zombie zoo. Painted in a corner, and all you wanna do is dance down at the zombie zoo. She disappears at sunrise, I wonder where she goes.
This is Bird Note. Imagine yourself an 18th century sailor, rowing out from your boat at night towards a remote Pacific island. You're heading to the island to find fresh water for the ship, only to be greeted by this frightful moaning. Some early sailors feared this ungodly wailing meant they'd been tricked ashore at the gates of hell itself, when in truth, they stood shuddering among courting pairs of seabirds called wedge-tailed shearwaters. Dark, gull-sized seabirds with long, thin, tapering wings. Wedge-tailed shearwaters nest on islands in the tropical Pacific and Indian Oceans, from Hawaii to Western Australia to Madagascar. Most dig burrows to nest in, 2 to 6 feet deep, with a bend that allows the incubating birds to rest unseen. From dusk to midnight during courtship, pairs of wedge-tailed shearwaters sit facing one another on the ground and puff up their throats to perform long duets of eerie wailing, sometimes sending spooked sailors rowing in panic back to their ship for a ration of grog. Treat yourself to a look at a wedge-tailed shearwater when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
All right. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and with me is not Nancy DeCherney. It's Megan Chambers, so she says, from the Jack.
I'm prepping for my Halloween costume.
It might be Nancy in disguise. We're not sure.
They have voice-changing technology here.
Sure they do. All right, Megan, welcome to the show again. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
What do you got for us for Arts Up?
It's a busy weekend, as usual. I say it every single time on the radio. But we'll start with Thursday. Today, there's a haunted station tonight at the Coast Guard, downtown, 345 Egan Drive. The event doesn't cost anything, but they do accept canned food donations. So if you're looking for haunted house, haunted station, head over to the Coast Guard.
Cool.
That starts at 7 p.m. Doors open then, and they would love you to have an ID. Then we move on to Friday. There's a League of Women Voters annual wine tasting. That's at the Hangar Ballroom at 5 o'clock. And then a haunted house at the Fire Training Center on Sherwood Street. So for a howling good time, come over, and it's a fundraiser for the firefighters.
Cool.
$5 entry fee.
That's great.
If you're feeling like skating around in some costumes, there's a Halloween skate on Friday night, and that's at Treadwell Ice Arena. It looks like pretty low cost, $2-$6. There's also a monster ball at Taku Lanes, and there's a costume contest. All ages are welcome. Suggested donation, $10.
There's too much to choose from.
I know. We're going to switch over to early morning on Saturday.
Okay.
So you guys are going to have a lot of fun on Friday, and then you're going to get up at 7, like all good garage sailors, and head to the community garage sale at the Jack. This is hosted by Juno Teens for a Change. It's open to the public, and I know we've gotten lots of calls about booths, so it sounds like it's going to be really busy. Then in the evening on Saturday, there's another event. It'll be a quick switch over there. Playboy Spaceman has their annual Halloween concert, Skull Party. Tickets are online on Facebook or on the Playboy Spaceman website, I believe. And that starts at 8 p.m. And I think they usually have a costume contest, too.
Costumes are definitely encouraged, at least they were last
year. Yeah. Sunday, there's an instant photography workshop hosted by Kindred Post, which looks pretty cool. You can register over the phone at 523-5053, and it's $45.
The they were here yesterday. The cameras are really cool, and the little photos they print out are awesome.
Yeah, I can't remember. Let's see. I don't have the name of the camera here, but they look really fun. I was looking it up, thinking about going.
Kind of like, it's kind of like a Polaroid, but way more like options for adjusting the color and the...
Oh, cool.
I don't know, all the different things you got on a camera. So.
And boy, are they social media and photo pros.
Yeah,
over there.
They sure are.
So if you've been thinking about that, that'd be a great thing to do. That's at 1 o'clock on Sunday. It's 2.5 hours. Monday, we got adult pickleball at Centennial Hall, free every Monday in October.
Still don't know what that is.
It's a sport of some kind. See, I'm obviously Nancy because I, once again, don't know what it is. No, I don't. I actually don't know what it is. I vaguely recall a friend played it in Washington at one point in time. So,
well, it seems to be spreading.
It's creeping up.
We got about a minute left.
Okay. At 3 o'clock is Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse at the Mendenhall Public Library. It's a big read event. So find out what kind of skills you need to survive the apocalypse. 3 p.m. Mendenhall Library.
That's awesome. Anything else?
That's it. We'll move on to next week. Next week, I guess.
Yeah. Every week with Arts Up. Well, thanks for being here, Megan / maybe secretly Nancy from the Jack. I always enjoy the rundown, and we'll have some of those folks on the show tomorrow. So let's just talk about what's going to be on the show tomorrow. We've got we'll hear about the community garage sale. We will get the scoop on underwater pumpkin carving. Didn't know that was a thing. We'll hear about the CBJ air quality monitoring, and Colette Costa will be here to give us the lowdown on Halloween-related events at the Gold Town Theater. So, Jeff Brown's the producer of this show. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.